Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Did you know that this coming week, March 10th through the 16th, is Groundwater Awareness Week? Now, why in the world would we have a Groundwater Awareness Week? Well, I think there's some pretty good reasons for having it. And a couple of my two guests today, I certainly can talk about it. Stephen Alice, who is Section Chief for Private Water Supply with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, with me in the studio.
Good morning. Steve, how are you today, Larry?
Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Ben, it's been probably about a year.
Yeah, usually it's the first or second week of March that Kevin and I are on.
And Kevin, we're talking Kevin Masaryk. Kevin's the Outreach Specialist at the Center for Watershed Science and Education at the UW Stevens Point. He's with us by phone. And Kevin, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, great to have you both back. Groundwater Awareness Week. Why is that such a good thing to have?
The advantage of the reason for that is just to bring people aware of where their drinking water comes from. You know, we have our surface water systems, which handle our larger cities, Milwaukee, Green Bay, but a large number of people in Wisconsin utilize groundwater as their drinking water source, and also to make people aware that the things they do on their own property really can affect the quality of their drinking water. So that's why for the last many years, you know, we're no longer using waste oil to dust roads and disposing of things like that. All of that does get into the groundwater.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you think about it, Kevin, isn't it true that the majority of people in the state here rely on groundwater?
Yeah, it's about three-quarters of all the citizens, 95% of all municipalities rely on groundwater as their principal water supply.
Yeah, so a lot of people out there relying, frankly, all of us in one way or another, rely on our groundwater here in the state. So it's great to be able to talk about it with Stephen Ellis and Kevin Masaryk. By the way, you can join in. You may have a question about groundwater wells. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can join in with a question or comment right there. You know, we've had drought conditions. Has that had an effect on our groundwater?
It certainly has. The last summer, it really seemed like the week of the 4th of July was a tipping point. Prior to that, in June, we weren't hearing of any issues. But the week of the 4th of July and then through the end of the summer, a lot of the folks in the DNR that work on drinking water issues, groundwater issues, started getting calls from well drillers and pump installers. They were having customers that were having wells that were going dry, wells that were starting to pump cloudy water. And you know, last year here in Madison, we ended up about 10.5 inches below normal. This wet pattern we've been on for the last couple of weeks is a good thing. Hopefully, we'll get the right melting conditions so that a lot of the snow that much of the state is getting today will recharge the aquifer.
Yeah, it's certainly a big help. And Kevin, of course, we had in the northern part of the state, we had drought for over quite a few years, actually.
Yeah, and what a lot of people don't always understand is that the groundwater is really intimately connected to our surface water system.
Yeah.
So that's what provides the water to most of our rivers and streams. A lot of our lakes are just a reflection of the water table. So when the water table goes down as a result of drought or other effects, we can see declines in our lake levels. We can see decreased base flow in our rivers and streams.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? We've got every incoming line filled with people who have questions for you. So let's go to Bob in Coloma first. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, frankly, Larry, to have this discussion aired on your show, so thank you.
Sure.
And appreciate your guests that you have today. This is more of a comment than a question. We have been engaged in the Coloma area. This is really not a specific issue about a factory farm or industrial agriculture, but it really is a fight over water. We look around the area. We see the Little Plover River just south of Stevens Point has been running dry over the last few years during the summers. Long Lake has been pretty much dewatered It's pretty much a prairie at this point in time. We're concerned about our lake, Pleasant Lake, near Coloma. It's down several feet, and yet water permits are being granted for these high-capacity wells. And the great concern that we have is that in spite of the fact that we have proven scientifically through hydrologists, through cases, in fact, the watershed study's own hydrologists have shown the significant impact of cumulative impacts on the wells. And with the Lake Beulah decision from 2 years ago, we're concerned and a little disappointed, frankly, that the DNR has not been able to step up and look for the cumulative impact. In fact, you may not be aware that just recently the a very large CAFO has sued the DNR against a permit restrictions that were actually granted for a large factory farm at the New Chester Dairy near Westfield, Wisconsin. And the challenge really is over just the fact that the DNR has asked for some very minor conditions, one of which is to install monitoring wells. So our concern is very great as citizens of the state. Wonderful, wonderful natural environment. And I'm not sure if I have a question, more of a comment, not to debate. Mm-hmm. We're just very concerned, obviously, in allowing the DNR to do its job.
Bob, I thank you very much for calling. Stephen, do you want to start? Stephen Ellis?
I'll touch on that a little bit. Obviously, it's a very complicated issue, particularly in that Central Sands part of the state. I guess what I'd like to say is that department staff are, with not just our geologists and hydrogeologists, but as he mentioned, there are a lot of legal aspects to this. And there are a number of folks within our agency that are looking at the issue. I only peripherally know the details, but it's a far, far too complicated issue to really try to get into and explain in our program today. But I appreciate your awareness and your concern for the groundwater resources.
Yeah. Kevin, any comment?
I'd reiterate what Steve said. Anytime you pump water out of a well, you are pumping taking or intercepting water that would normally flow to a nearby river or stream. So it is important that we start looking and considering those cumulative impacts, especially in areas where we have a large concentration of very high pumping or high capacity wells.
Yeah, it's probably a topic I should just deal with. I have a special program on that. It's probably worth looking at. Bob, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We'll see if we can work something like that out into a future show. We had Jared in Cresco, Iowa call. He was wondering about, worried about prescription medications. Something like that. Might they be contaminating our groundwaters?
We do. There is research that's ongoing through numerous institutions looking at the impact of pharmaceuticals that people dump down the drain that get into our water supplies. That's the reason why a lot of communities are looking at pharmaceutical take-back programs where you can drop off those drugs at your local police department or pharmacy. And those are good things to do. We do find trace elements or trace amounts of those pharmaceuticals showing up in certain water supplies, especially when they're down gradient of kind of wastewater treatment plants. And we really don't know what the long-term impact of that's going to be on humans and also the aquatic life that lives in those systems.
Yeah. Well, I wonder about wells for just a minute. What should and this is a question that some other people have been asking about. What should well owners be thinking about at this time of the year? Is this a good time to be testing, for example, or is it?
You bet. Actually, any time of the year, as long as somebody sets up a regular schedule for sampling their well, the department recommends that everybody sample their well annually for bacteria, or any time you notice a change in the aesthetic of your water. If you notice a change in the taste or the odor, we would recommend you get your well tested. But annually for bacteria, annually for nitrate, we generally recommend people, if they live in an ag area, they may want to consider running an ag herbicide test.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that we've been recommending the last several years is that people know the arsenic level in their wells. We are finding arsenic in different parts of the state, some more than others, but we have found it in every county. So that's sort of a, people should have their well tested at least once for arsenic so they know what their level is. That's generally the department's recommendation. I don't know if, Kevin, if you have others that you work with.
Well, I just, you know, the common question I get from people is, where do I send a sample? What do I test for? And I think the DNR's What's Wrong With My Water website is a great resource for people that might not be sure how to go about testing their water or where to send a sample. That's a great resource for people.
Yeah, that can be found just by typing the phrase What's Wrong With My Water into Google, and you'll go to the department's webpage or to the department's series of webpages regarded on that issue. And it's sort of a self-diagnosis to help people figure out what some of their water sampling issues, water quality issues might be. You can get to the list of bacteria labs by going to the main DNR webpage, just dnr.wi.gov. In that search box, just type in bacteria testing labs, and you'll get a list of all the labs in the state that are approved for bacteria testing.
Very good. Mike in Castle Rock, let's turn to you next. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I live in a rural area, and people change their oil in their tractor, et cetera. Why is there no recycling of that material? It gets into the ecosystem.
Yeah, it's there's supposed to be recycling of it, as a matter of fact, isn't it?
Yeah, that may be just something enough to take up with your township. You know, I think most communities do have a recycling program. I'm not sure if like the quick change places have to take your used oil or not. Do you know the answer to that, Kevin?
I don't, but I, you know, most communities do have some designated spot where you're supposed to be able to drop those things off.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you definitely want to bring that up with your local community, and if you're observing that sort of thing, you should probably be talking to the the people about not doing that, because that's most cases that would be considered not
legal. Discharging, you know, a hazardous substance onto the ground, and that's not something we want to promote at all.
Yeah. So I hope you'll do that, Mike. Thank you for calling. Mark in Ashland, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. Very interesting show. I'm kind of concerned about the mine that's being legislated on up in the Pinokies right above my house here.
Yep.
I live on the down river side of it, the Bad River side, where all the water will drain.
Yep.
And I'm concerned that, you know, I don't think that particular mine is going to go through, because I think the Anishinaabe will stop it. But if the law goes through, then my understanding is they could frack the whole rest of the state using that same methodology as the mine they'll use here. And how would fracking affect the groundwater of our state? And how does it affect, like, the groundwater of other states, like North Dakota? They're doing it heavily. Out east, I understand they've done it quite a bit.
Okay.
Well,
turn to Steve Alice,
sure,
by the way.
The thing to keep in mind about fracking is that generally fracking is a process where liquid is injected in the subsurface under high pressure to open up fractures in the rock. And Wisconsin, what they're after generally is natural gas or oil. Now, Wisconsin doesn't have any natural gas or oil. So, in fact, there would not be a need from that standpoint to frack for those purposes. We do approve hydraulic fracking of water supply wells, though, in the northern part of the state, generally in granite formations. That is high-pressure water that's, you know, injected. And, again, the idea is to open up those fractures. But that is not at all related to the process you're hearing about on a national basis, but particularly in the Pennsylvania area, they're doing quite a bit. North Dakota, as the caller mentioned. But what Wisconsin does have is the type of sand that is used in fracking. So you're hearing up in the Eau Claire area generally, the rock formations that are there, the type of sand in that sandstone works very well, that when they inject that under high pressure, it will move into the fractures, then help keep those fractures open. Hmm. So Wisconsin doesn't frack from the standpoint that you hear about on a national basis. We just don't have oil and natural gas, but we do have the sand that is used in that process.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Stephen Alice, section chief for private water supply with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kevin Masaryk, outreach specialist at the Center for Watershed Science and Education at the UW-Stevens Point, as we talk with them about groundwaters next week, Groundwater Awareness Week. I'm Larry Mueller. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking groundwater today with our two guests, Stephen Alice of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Kevin Masaryk from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Tony and McQuanigo, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
You're welcome. I just want to offer something that may be of help to others. We went through a earwig infestation in our well for, well, it took me a number of years, actually, to deal with it. Because my well was dug in 68 and did not have a vermin-proof cap, and the earwigs were already in there when I thought about it. And I did have it bailed out, finally. It took quite a rigmarole. But most people don't even think about that. And the earwigs are here. They've been here. I had the infestation, they think, about 1998 already. And, you know, they get in the aerators and the faucets. The body parts get chewed up. They theorize I had 2 to 3 feet of dead bodies in the bottom of the well.
Wow.
So, believe me, I sample more than once a year. I've learned my lesson. The bacteria count right now is acceptable, but it was up. The coliform count was 100, depending which test you use, the call alert test and so forth. But I'm just letting people know that, you know, it could be. I'm not the only one, believe me.
Yeah, it pays the test.
You're definitely not the only one. We run into that situation many, many times a year. And that brings up another point that we like to stress with folks is that in addition to testing, you really should just do an inspection of your well every year. Make sure that your well cap is tight. A fairly common thing is somebody will hit the well with their mower and break the electrical conduit where the pump wire is located. Often that's PVC. They'll crack that, and when they do, your cap now becomes open to earwigs, Asian lady beetles, box elder bugs, that type of thing. So I've talked to many folks like the caller who've had several feet of bugs in their well, and you know, they're going to need a professional to come in and really clean out that well.
Yeah, actually, very good points. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate your call. We have, let's see, what have we got here? We've got Gary in Nakusa up next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have land that's in Saratoga, and I have a house by Lake Camelot. And my question is, what effect do you feel is going to happen to the private and public wells in the area of Saratoga if this there's a proposed capelin that wants to come in with over 600 or 6,000 cow units, and they want to have 47 high-pressure wells, and they want to have 6,000 acres of irrigated crops.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's turn to Stephen Alice.
Well, that's yet another situation the department is working on. In that proposal, again, it would be a confined animal feeding operation that is proposed up in Wood County. The department will have to approve those high-capacity wells. Each high-capacity well does undergo an analysis. We do look at the impacts of those wells on the surface waters in the area, and where we have the authority, we work with the applicants, set pumping limits as needed. But it is a regulatory issue that is at the forefront right now. And like I said to the earlier caller, we do have a number of people in the agency, geologists, hydrogeologists, our team of lawyers that are looking at what we believe our authority is.
Hmm. There we go. Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an email from Rick. Your guest mentioned that hopefully we'll get the right conditions for snowmelt to infiltrate the ground rather than flow off. This is getting back to that issue. What are the right conditions for that to happen? And, Kevin, you want to take that?
Sure. Spring is definitely a good time for groundwater recharge and replenishing our groundwater aquifers. Ideally, you want that melt to happen gradually over time and give that water the best chance at soaking into the ground. If it melts faster than it can seep into the soil, then the majority of that is going to end up running off. The snowpack is important. A deep snowpack helps insulate the ground from the really cold days during the winter. And I think, in general, we've had a pretty good snowpack, so I don't know how deep that frost layer goes. And when you don't have a deep frost layer, that's another thing that's good for recharge.
Yeah, that's a good thing. We used to have it. I don't know that we still, I probably still do, but funeral directors and cemetery officials around Wisconsin kept track of the frost depth for us. Is that still done?
I don't know if that group does, but I do know there's some agronomic services that do that. So some farm bureaus and some land conservation folks will do some of that work.
Oh, interesting. And I think, Kevin, I think you're right. We got some snow early, quite a bit of snow early, which was always a good thing, I think, because it really does prevent that frost from going way down.
I would just add that, I talked about this with Steve the other day, that in the forecast for the next week or so, I think we're predicting warmer temperatures, maybe some rain. Those are all conditions that would really exacerbate runoff. So if there's any farmers, especially farmers that are spreading manure this time of year, really encourage them to pay attention to the forecast so we can reduce any problems that might result from kind of manure management and manure runoff issues.
Now, Bruce in Saratoga, on to you now. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is a bit pointed, but a number of us already are quite aware that the Central Sands Dairy in Armenia, owned by the Wasaki Organization, has already been shown to be in violation of groundwater contamination issues. The monitoring wells are already exceeding the EPA nitrate levels. The DNR is aware of this, but as of this date, there's been no action. And this is the same organization that wants to drill 49 high-capacity wells and do create a similar dairy CAFO here in Saratoga. So we in Saratoga are quite concerned seeing what has happened over in Armenia.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I'm not aware of the specifics of that particular farm and the data that you're talking about, so I just really can't speak to that.
Yeah.
I would add that, with any type of agriculture, you're going to have some impact to water quality. No crop is 100% efficient at removing the nutrients that we apply to the soil for crop growth. So there is going to be some loss. So I just want to emphasize that it might not be that these farms are necessarily doing anything wrong, applying more than their permit allows, things like that. Some of these things are just inherent to the types of agricultural production that we have in Wisconsin and other parts of the United States.
Yeah, there we go. I had a Facebook comment from Elaine I wanted to bring up because we had a question earlier about drugs and how to, possibly getting into the water supply. If you don't have access to a drug take-back program, well, many places do, but you're directed to put unneeded meds into a hard container. You put liquid soap in the container so nobody can use those meds, and then you place them in the regular garbage, and that's the way to handle that.
Yeah, I haven't kept track of how the department or how the various pharmaceutical industry are recommending disposal of drugs if there aren't a buyback program or a take-back program available.
Thor in Crystal Lake, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hello.
How are you?
Good.
I'm calling to thank you for putting this program on, and I would hope to see more coverage like you're doing now in the future, because I think the public is really unaware and seemingly unconcerned about the quality of groundwater or our drinking water. They seem to get turned up about issues regarding air quality, oil pollution on the pipeline, things like that. But it seems to be a real job to get people to realize how important good groundwater is, good drinking water. So this kind of program and more coverage need to get the public behind some kind of effort to protect our water supplies and get the government to do something. That's basically why I called, is to thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition, I wanted to mention that the man from Nakusa, and of course Bruce, who talked about the CAFO in Saratoga, I think one of the interesting facts is that this CAFO is going to be using 49 wells for this operation, meaning 47 to water crops and 2 for watering the cows. And this is the first time in this kind of a CAFO operation that they're using more than 2 wells. They usually only use 2 wells for watering the cattle. So this is almost like an experiment.
Hmm.
And I think that's a factor that should be considered and examined carefully.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you again. I hope you do keep doing more and more program and coverage like this.
Well, I thank you very much. And obviously we need to probably get the right people on who are involved from DNR and from elsewhere in this whole area.
I appreciate the comment about the knowledge that we need to share regarding groundwater quality, and I'd just like to put in a plug for a new resource called the Wisconsin Well Water Viewer.
Mm-hmm.
It allows the general public access to information about groundwater quality in their immediate vicinity. It's a searchable kind of online mapping tool. So if people kind of want to get an idea of what information exists regarding groundwater quality where they live, I'd encourage them to go online and search for Wisconsin Well Water Viewer and try that resource out.
Wisconsin Well Water Viewer.
Correct.
Interesting. Gabrielle Pedriani is our on-air producer for today. Maybe I'll talk with her and see if we can't post a link to my Facebook page.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so we can get that up. So, Gabrielle, if you heard that, she's on the phone talking to people a lot, so it's hard to remember all that. But we'll get a link to that site. Susan in Coon Valley, let's turn to you next. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. You know, your previous caller referenced government needs to do something. Well, you know, we're the government, and water is our most precious resource. And if you go to your townships, you will discover that they do have recycling programs, and if not, local residents need to get on board, put pressure on their boards, go to them, talk about recycling programs, and also to get politically active regarding the CAFOs, the high-capacity wells, and not sit back and think, oh, well, somebody else is going to take care of it, because it's not. It's us. We're the government. We need to get involved. We don't need to read about it after the fact. Now, you're touching on a real political hot potato here, and mm-hmm. I would like to think that people have backbones that get into this and fight it and not allow high-capacity wells to break rules and to put some pressure on the governor. The DNR is, you know, their backbone says, oh, well, we don't have enough people to go around and test and check. That's a bunch of hooey. We cannot afford to lose our quality of our groundwater. It is a very precious resource.
Well, I don't think you're going to get any argument from Stephen or Kevin on this.
No, water is an amazingly important resource, and her comment about contacting your local elected officials and your state elected officials is where you're going to be able to voice your opinion and try to make change.
And I would put in a plug for the importance of routine well water testing. I deal with a lot of people that, you know, are concerned that their water quality has changed over time, and when I ask them for information about what their water quality used to look like, they don't have those results. So if you want to be able to show changes in water quality over time, it's really up to the individual well owner to take that initiative and do some routine testing for things like nitrate.
Yeah. Because as Kevin mentioned there, there is no requirement in Wisconsin for people to test their own wells. So people that are on private wells, it is your responsibility to know your water quality, and that's why we put out the recommendations we do. Those tests are the most common, and they're also readily available.
Yeah,
and there are some local governments that are very proactive when it comes to well water testing. They'll organize kind of community water testing programs to make it a little bit more convenient for their constituents to learn about their well water quality.
Yeah. Darren in Madison comment. Thank you for calling, Darren. Hi.
Hi there. I really also agree and appreciate with almost everything that everybody's been talking about. My background is in watershed management and wetland science, and I have previously served as environmental planner at a county level. And so this is all very important stuff, and I agree in full. But my question actually is more on the recreational wildlife side of groundwater prediction, basically, you know, taking consideration the strange precipitation we've had the last 2 years in Wisconsin, trying to gauge, trying to gauge recharge to evaluate water level in, you know, certain rivers, ponds, and if you have any recommendations on a site or something that can give good predictions based on combination of, you know, absorbed snow melt versus precipitation that runs off. Any recommendations on that, something that can predict?
Yeah. Kevin?
I don't know of any predictive tools, but I do know that the Wisconsin Water Science Center, they're affiliated with the U.S. Geological Natural History Survey. Their website does have river and stream gauge monitoring data, so you can at least see how those systems are currently responding and how they've been reacting over the last months or even years sometimes.
Right. So really more manually going in and then, you know, drawing the conclusions myself based on available USGS data is what you're saying?
Yeah, but, one general rule of thumb, the more water you have, the more rain and precipitation, the more groundwater recharge you're eventually going to have. It just takes time to kind of see some of that response in the system.
Yeah,
definitely familiar. And I'm curious with this winter, as I've heard that it's the sixth most highest precipitation levels in Wisconsin so far, if that's accurate. But, is that setting us up for pretty good recharge this winter because of all the melting and freezing and melting repeatedly?
I think certainly better than previous couple of years, but we're starting at kind of a deficit, too. So it's going to take probably a few years of above-average precipitation to maybe get us back to where we consider to be normal levels.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Kevin, by the way, you know, I mentioned earlier you're outreach specialist at the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point, and I sort of a little remiss here. I should have asked you right away to talk about what that center is all about.
We do a variety of water outreach and research activities. One of the main things I do is community water testing programs where, again, we work with kind of local residents to test their water and learn a little bit about what their community water quality is like. And a lot of our reports, a lot of our data is available on our website for people that might be interested in that.
Mm-hmm. And your website is?
Center for Watershed Science and Education is probably the easiest way to get to it. Just type that into Google or any sort of search engine.
Yeah, I think we've got it listed on my Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show. So we've got that as well. And let's see, Chris in Saratoga.
Hi.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling.
My question is, I had a deep well that was tainted from a gasoline station years ago. And about 15 years later, about last year, they DNR retested it and said it was all within the safe limits now. Could I raise my pump up and go up to the shallower depth now that it's clear?
I guess what I would say is there must be a DNR person that was assigned to that site. And I would talk to that person to gather. It's hard to tell without knowing the specifics of your data, but it sounds as though your well's been tested a number of times. What they've told you recently is that the levels of the gasoline compounds are no longer exceeding any drinking water standards. I guess I would say there's probably not then the gas in your well. Hopefully that moving your pump up shouldn't make a difference. And hopefully you still won't have any gas in your well.
Yeah.
But I would talk to someone that's knowledgeable about that particular spill situation.
Yeah. Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, it's Carl in Madison says, what's a CAPO?
Oh, CAFO, Confined Animal Feeding Operation.
We should have brought that up, yep. Right? It's Confined Animal Feeding Operation. And it's unique in that typically the numbers that we're talking about now in terms of cattle is exceeding 1,000, 2,000.
Yeah, we have a standard called an animal unit. And a sheep is different than a chicken is different than a dairy cow. But 1,000 animal units is the breakoff for what we would regulate as a CAFO.
And Randy in Keewaskum, we'll go to you. Hi, Randy. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. One thing I'm curious about, anytime there's runoff, it always seems to get blamed on farmers. When you had the cryptosporidium, it got blamed on farm runoff and ended up being from humans. One thing I see driving around here, out here every day, you've got all these rural subdivisions and you've got all the houses out here, and you've got the same race to the greenest yard as you have in town. You've got these lawn services out there, and you've got a lot of people that fertilize and put herbicides and pesticides on their own lawns to keep them green and weed-free. Has anybody done any studies to check how much of this runoff is coming from rural homeowners in as a percentage as compared to farm runoff? Because with the cost of things, farmers aren't going to put any more chemicals on the land that they have to because they're paying for it.
Yeah. Kevin, we'll turn to you.
Yeah, you know, any sort of land use where you're applying chemicals like fertilizer, there's a potential for water quality impacts. And if you have concentrated lawn activities like that, you might have some very localized impacts. What I would say to put it into perspective is, you know, it's a land area issue. So if we want to look at the budget or the sources of nitrogen to Wisconsin groundwater, there was a study done back in the 90s which showed, you know, about 90% of all the nitrogen in groundwater is related to agriculture, about 9% is related to people's septic systems, and about 1% was lawn activity. And it's just related to the amount of acreage or area that those activities are in. All those systems are not 100% efficient at capturing the nutrients, so there's always going to be some loss. And in terms of the amount of loss, that's just related to the area that's in that type of land use.
I appreciate that that comment. And guys, here we are. The time flew by. We're out of time. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Kevin, so much for being with us today.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Get those wells tested.
Get those wells tested.
All right. Stephen Ellis is Section Chief for Private Water Supply with the DNR, and Kevin Masaryk, Outreach Specialist at the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. And you can go to my Facebook page and find out more about how to get your well tested and what you need to do. And certainly it's something that everybody ought to be doing at least once a year. And you want to protect that groundwater. It's a buried treasure. Actually, thinking ahead here, my guest next hour is going to be talking about another buried treasure. He's an archaeologist who studied a state historical society over a site that was started about 150 years ago. We'll explore Fort Blue Mounds coming up after the break here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.